Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the launch event for the latest report produced as part of the IWA's crew-funded project on the foundational economy. I'm Andy Regan. I'm Policy and External Affairs Manager at the IWA, overseeing all our policy and research projects. For those of us who don't, know us, the IWA is Wales's leading independent think tank with a long track record of shaping debates and influencing change in Wales through policy research and advocacy. Through our online and print publications, which provide platforms for robust comment and debate, and our agenda-setting events. We're a membership organisation with members across the country and far further afield. We're funded by our members, the events we run ourselves, and independent trusts and foundations. The report and today's launch event will be focused on an area of policy that is rarely at the top of ministers' agendas or splashed across the front pages. But of course, not everything that is important is exciting, and not everything that is exciting is important. So we're talking, of course, about regulation, meaning the rules and requirements that are set by governments and public bodies. And this is regularly a top concern of business owners, and is an important part of the dynamic but sometimes invisible systems that shape our lives and our places and our futures. Regulation is not just about public safety and consumer protection, but is also a component of economic development policy, which is why the IWA has taken an interest in it and how it impacts Wales's ambitions for a stronger foundational economy. Our report, which will now pop a link into the chat box so you can take a look at it, provides examples of how rules and inspection covering aspects of business practice, such as health and safety, food hygiene, public procurement and employment, can be disproportionately harder for smaller businesses to understand and comply with. For smaller firms, smaller grounded firms in foundational sectors, one person will often carry the responsibilities of being the founder, owner, and manager of the business. Rules and the complexity of how they are presented works in favour of larger firms who can rely on compliance officers and big legal departments to help them navigate regulation and its implications. So our main argument in the report is that Welsh regulators should develop more relational approaches to how rules are set and enforced, and we'll come on to what we mean by that in the presentations. Who are we talking about when we say Welsh regulators? Well, it would include the Welsh Government, who perhaps don't consistently conceive of themselves as a regulator, as well as their regulatory agencies, such as Natural Resources Wales, for example, and local authorities who act as inspectorates and enforcers. So just as supporting the foundation economy has meant adapting procurement processes and expectations to improve access by local firms and thereby bolstering local foundational economies, so too should regulation and inspection be delivered in a way that supports firms to become compliant and in doing so become better at what they do. With us today, we have Dr. Jack Watkins from the IWA, who is leading our policy work on the foundation economy and who will give an overview of the report and its key messages. We've produced this work in partnership with The Means, a placemaking consultancy with over 20 years of experience of delivering projects in collaboration with businesses, governments and citizens. Peter Williams, the founder and managing director of The Means, will be joining us to share some reflections on what they learned from engaging with businesses across Wales. We're also pleased to be joined by Dr. Llyr ap Gareth, head of policy at the Federation of Small Businesses Wales, who, along with his colleagues, has worked to raise the profile of this policy issue over a number of years. Thank you both for joining us today. A little bit of housekeeping before we crack on. We will be devoting around 15 minutes of the session today to questions from the audience. If you look at the small menu at the bottom of the screen, you should be able to see a chat function. Please use this to submit questions in writing throughout the event. And then what I will do is call on you individually to join us on the video, switch your video on and ask your question. Obviously, if you'd rather I read a question out, please just let us know and we can do that as well if you don't want to pop on the video. You will notice that you've all been muted on entry, but we will unmute you if you're called on to ask a question. And in order to prevent background noise, please do keep yourself muted unless you're being asked to speak. Please also feel free to use the chat window to provide comments and respond to what's being said. You know, your feedback helps us develop our future programmes of work, and we know that lots of people often find they make useful connections by attending IWA events. So please feel free to just introduce yourself in the chat too. Please do remember that all the chats and questions are recorded, and video and audio of today's event will be made available via our YouTube and podcast channels shortly afterwards. if you feel inspired to tweet, you can at us. We are at IWA_Wales, and we suggest using the hashtag foundational economy so other people can find your tweets if they're interested in that. So I'm going to hand over now to Jack and Peter to talk us through the work. Jack, I've touched on it, but can you start by telling us a bit more about your project as a whole and why we chose to focus on regulation? Over to you.
Thanks very much, Andy. Thank you. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. It's really great to see so many people. It's as Andy said, it's a topic that isn't necessarily the first one people think of, and it's just really good that we can shine a little bit of light on it, really. I'll start by just talking a little bit of background about the work the IWA is doing on the foundation economy. So we've been generously supported by Crewe to spend a couple of years looking at how the foundation economy as a policy agenda is developing in Wales, and what kind of things can be done by the Welsh government, by local government, by, you know, kind of key policymakers within Wales. People who follow government policy would have noted, particularly over the last period of government, that foundation economy has been a key feature of Welsh Labour's approach to economic development. And it's also central to a number of other policy aims as well, particularly improving access to social care, improving access to housing, and decarbonisation as well. It's been treated in part as a policy lens through which to look at all of these different problems and find ways of contributing towards them that actually capture more economic development benefit within Wales. But key thing to say about, you know, our work is that the foundation economy is a developing area. It's relatively recent. So really what we're trying to do is explore the various different policy areas that the Welsh government and other policymakers here have control over, and to try and identify what kind of levers they can use to achieve the aims that they're looking to achieve. So we've already produced a report previously on business support programs, looking at programs, All Wales programs like Business Wales, looking at the Development Bank of Wales. We're going to be doing work in the future over the coming months, looking at Wales's innovation systems and skills systems and whether those are being designed and operated with the foundation economy in mind. And with this piece of work, we've chosen to focus on something which, as we've sort of alluded to, is really a key part of a strong component of economic development policy, but something that's not necessarily always seen that way. So Andy's touched on this a little, but what do we mean by regulation? It is about rules. It's about rules being set by government, by UK and devolved governments, and by regulatory agencies, some of which are at a UK level, some of which are Wales-based. And also, as we've already suggested, local government has actually a very strong role to play in regulation, both as a kind of as setting rules in certain instances and setting policy, but also acting as the kind of front line. And one theme that we'll come to throughout talking about this work is that as in many other areas of policy, the responsibilities and the duties that local government are being given don't necessarily match up with the resources that they're being given. In terms of why regulation is an important policy area, why it's important to economic development, I think it's important to avoid maybe there is a kind of simplistic narrative about regulation presented along the political spectrum, which is that the political left wants to regulate and the political right wants to deregulate. I think what we've tried to do here is to explore some of the nuances in between that. What we found, and I think the key starting point for this work, this is something that comes up in business service surveys regularly. Half of businesses in Wales see regulation as their biggest challenge. It's some businesses see it as a bigger challenge than competition. It's a bigger challenge than trying to recruit and retain staff. So for businesses, particularly small businesses in their day-to-day lives, this is one of the first things they think about. It's one of the biggest problems that they face. So that alone sort of sets out a context whereby it really does need to be thought about, not just as sort of individual rules, individual regulators, but really as a kind of cumulative effect that it has on businesses. Some important contextual factors in recent years. Obviously, the devolution settlement has an impact on regulation. It has seen more powers being transferred to Welsh Government and to Wales-based bodies, but also Brexit. And Brexit has offers an opportunity to think about regulation differently. That some people see that as an opportunity to explore deregulation. What it means in the sort of immediate term is that there are thousands of regulations that were wrestling at the European Commission level that are now going to be coming to Wales, some of them via the UK, some of them may stay at the UK, and there's a whole separate debate to be had around that. But ultimately, there will be more regulation being set within the UK and within Wales. However, perhaps compared with the European Commission, which has quite a detailed, complex policy framework around how regulation is set, how you balance the interests of creating a clear regulatory system that protects consumers and protects citizens with, at the same time, not creating a system that is burdensome on businesses. At the European level, there's quite a complex policy framework with various systems in place to kind of encourage rule setters to have these kind of conversations, undertake this analysis. Our concern is that this is less of the case in Wales, and potentially the amount of regulation that's coming to Wales isn't necessarily being matched by a kind of policy framework in place to actually set out who's doing what and who is having a kind of general overview of the whole system. Very much things rest with individual agencies at the moment. And this is also a contrast to what's happening in England and also in Scotland, where in both cases there are kind of policy and legal instruments in place that sort of embed certain principles, embed certain processes and practices. In particular, in recent years, more and more interest in the different effects that regulation can have on small versus large businesses. So that's something that's really informed the way that we're thinking about this work. So I'm going to hand over now to Peter Williams, who, as Andy has introduced, is Managing Director of the MEANS. And we've worked in collaboration to do some engagement with businesses in a variety of sectors, foundational sectors across Wales, and have heard a lot about their experiences, practical first-hand experiences of dealing with regulation. So, Peter, if I hand over to you, just to give us a bit of background on that.
Great. Okay, thanks very much, Jack. And the words excitement came up a couple of times in the introduction there. Well, I must admit, I was excited by the opportunities of speaking to these businesses in terms of the improvements that could be made to the landscape. And I think you set out in the introduction there, Jack, that where the opportunities are, you know, coming on stream, aren't they? So it's a good time, an opportune time to be doing this. And I should say, first of all, thanks to all the businesses that took part. You know, characteristically, they were generous with their time. And also, the business principals had interests beyond the confines of their business. I think it's quite typical, active in their communities in other respects. And the second general point I'd make in the introduction, I suppose, is that the FE sectors we looked at, you know, their importance has been thrown into ever sharper relief, hasn't it? Food production, logistics, care, social care, construction. They're very important to the economy in Wales and throughout the UK. Just to start with construction there, we know that the house building industry is key to the UK economy. It's been hit particularly hard, 2009, et cetera, et cetera. And as a result of that, this acute housing shortage that the UK suffers from kind of persists. But I was really interested to learn that whereas in the 1980s, SME builders built 40% of all new homes, by 2016, this percentage had fallen to 12%. I can remember when almost every small town in Wales had its kind of house builder. And now there's only kind of 12 across the whole of the South Wales region, volume builders having taken over their previous role. Social care, very topical in the news last week, wasn't it? Another proposal to fund it in a slightly different way. Secure and sustainable funding, obviously a key consideration, but so is also is the quality and viability of the delivery mechanisms. And I'll come to that in a moment. And then food production here, a slap back in the day, the current logistical difficulties, the experience of COVID made us much more aware of the benefits of locally sourced products. So three key sectors are the main sectors we looked at. We looked at manufacturing a little as well. So what is regulation doing to help or hinder the progress in those sectors? I think this has kind of already been said, but I do just want to repeat it, that no company we interviewed wanted or expected widespread deregulation. I was quite surprised that the role of regulation is kind of really well understood and valued in for example, upkeeping standards in care, improving the environmental performance in the construction sector, safeguarding consumer interests in food, and even with engineering there, you know, this idea that regulation can help create a level playing field, allowing Welsh firms to compete in global markets. So the acceptance of regulation, I think, is a given. The concern is much more subtle, and it's a way around the way that the regulatory framework is designed and implied. So let's go back to that kind of small house builder. You know, typically they're working on brownfield sites, whereas the bottom builder is out there on greenfield sites. So this has got other implications. You know, just supporting that kind of work is an important thing in itself. And we discovered there were kind of three probably areas where the regulatory system was impacting on them. And I think it was Andy who said this. None of these in itself is an issue, but the cumulative effect is the problem. So, for example, we all understand why we need ecology consultants to look at promoting biodiversity and so forth, but it adds costs, and it adds disproportionate costs if you're doing two units than if you're doing 202 units, obviously. The same applies to the kind of requirements for on-site retention and drainage of rainwater, the use of swales, commuted sums for maintenance in perpetuity. You know, relatively easy for that guy in the volume house builder who's charged with doing that. Very difficult for the guy who's splitting his time between managing subcontractors on a two or three house infill site. And there are things about the space standards and so forth, and spreading the cost of increased space standards across a limited number of units. And indeed, working at brownfield sites, of course, you are stuck with remediation costs that you're not confronted with on greenfield sites. So that kind of whole planning thing is part of the three problems we discovered, the three general problems. Planning also relates to the problems around finance, because for the small builders, they're trying to access finance. They will not get finance until they get planning. The planning is taking longer and longer in most authorities. So the problems of financing the work during that period is a real consideration. And then there's the transactional costs of dealing with utilities. If you, it's a monopolistic situation in most cases, and you've just got to wait. And obviously, if you're dealing with 200 units as opposed to two, again, you know, the transactional costs are a real consideration. And a further area in construction was interesting, I think, because it's quite paradoxical. And this is the move towards a more socially oriented procurement system. And this is meant, isn't it, to give a platform for ground firms to engage with contracts for public works. But its operation poses, you know, kind of paradoxical obstacle, as I was alluding to. So the TOMS framework is the one that's used nationally across the UK. It's there to introduce metrics and social value and such. And as such, it's a kind of regulatory expectation. But in the Welsh context, it throws up some, it skews certain things. So, for example, when commissioners are asked to use local suppliers, what defines local is not consistent. You know, the radius is different within different local authority areas, as indeed are the targets around the number of percentage of subcontractors and all those kind of things. That kind of varies. So that's confusing for the smaller firm. And then when you're in kind of rural powers and you're looking for a structural steel, for example, what defines a local source for that? Your choices are obviously constrained. So that very implement that's meant to kind of progress the FE is in some ways causing a little bit of a hindrance. Turning over to social care, again for Wales, kind of huge issue. The number of over 75s due to increase by 70%, and over 85s expected to double by 2040. So, it should be at the forefront of all our minds. Salaries below NHS standards, and obviously quite often below retail standards. So attracting staff and retaining them is a huge issue. The solutions that are regularly impact are kind of quite nuanced, I feel. So one of the avenues felt worthy of investigation is how changes can be made to the accreditation framework. The assistance on kind of certification through examination, could that be varied so that we could actually indicate competence through not through formal assessments or qualifications, but by accrediting experience and orientation and so forth. And there's kind of good stuff happening there. And another potential innovation, which again is, it should be within our grasp. Obviously, all these things have got problems and impediments. But this idea that micro carers could take a much, much greater role in the provision of care. At the moment, a micro carer is limited to 4 clients. And if you want to go above that, you've got to do a lot of training and qualifications. You've got to register with the Care and Social Services Inspectorate. And that obviously poses a barrier to growth of small enterprises. And in Flintshire, they're doing some terrific work around this. And the hub of that is around collaboration, the potential role of secondary support services, providing advice on human resources, legal issues, finance, tendering, the kind of things that small firms actually kind of struggle with. And that was a consistent theme throughout all the sectors, that this idea that some advice could be procured kind of generally across a number of firms as opposed to the level of firm is an useful kind of model, I think. Turning to food production, I made those points earlier on about how we're all, if food miles didn't grab us as a concept, the whole thing about not being able to get things during COVID has brought the weakness in the chain of food provision to the forefront of debate. And there is this idea in the WWF report that we should have an aim of relocalizing the food system. So how's that going to happen, and how can we help it, and what is actually hindering it? And we came up with some really interesting companies. Great to talk to them and learn what they're doing, and some interesting features that they've kind of come up against. So the nut butter company, for example, artisan peanut butters. Apparently top of the shop with Tom Kerridge, we were told. So this firm consciously uses only organic ingredients. However, they're not able to certify their own products as organic because the accreditation for that, the process of accreditation is so costly. So just to quote them directly, we would love to be able to label and market our nut butters as organic, as the ingredients are all accredited with the Soil Association. But legally, we can't unless we get accredited ourselves. Prohibitive costs for small producers. So that was interesting, I felt. And they tried to move into making animal feed, and there's a whole new set of regulations impacted on them, and they had to give up on that. Ira Thrive Limited is a honey farm based in the Fuchur Valley between Carmarthenshire and Swansea there. So it was a labelling requirement here. Again, to quote them directly, we were advised not to use keywords like raw and pure at our detriment, as some larger handy companies just use those words with somebody with impunity. Fudge pots. They produce spiced Welsh fudge, updating traditional recipes. So they were positive about their experience of regulation. Here we entered into the realm of whether food hygiene certification was a requirement and whether firms had to actually pay for that. And this highlights for us one of the instances. I'm sure Jack will return to this in terms of the conclusions. It's saying about overcompliance, people worried, so they either step away from it or overcomply. And going back to the theme I said in the construction about this idea of joint back office, we came across 025, which are based in Cardiff Metropolitan University, and they provide technical support to food businesses around food safety and supporting regional firms to gain this safe and local supplier approval status. And this model of collaboration, developing shared back offices, we spoke to the Wales Cooperative Centre, and they talked about secondary co-ops and cooperative consortia. So I think it's really some mileage, and hopefully this report will push thinking forward. Lastly, we looked at something which possibly not always considered as part of FE, and that's manufacturing. But given that it contributes 16.8% of gross value of GVA in Wales, it's obviously very key to the Welsh economy, and the Welsh government is obviously committed to promoting the sector and helping it to compete internationally. And we spoke to EBS internationally, a fantastic company doing AI, robotics, international customer base. And we started talking about this kite mark, this move from a CE kite mark to this UK CA mark. Again, the fact that this is a quality assurance kite mark helps them compete. But the way that it's applied and the lack of practitioners in thinking about the way it applies and the timescales for such things is the kind of irritant, if I can put it there. Insufficient consultation, copper-bottomed, risk-averse application was kind of hindering things. And just to round off, there was this kind of general thing from everybody we spoke to, and Jack touched upon it a little earlier when he spoke about compliance departments within larger kind of institutions and organizations. But the thing about employment law, for example, and it's not just employment law, just picking on that for a moment, employment law is constant, it's dynamic, it's constantly changing. And it's really, really difficult for small firms to keep up with that. And it's come to the fore with the fact that lots of small firms, I think, would take on more apprentices if they were able to work their heads around how it operates and make that a little bit more simple. And there was this remark about having silo busters. You know, having somebody, and it probably, Jack, kind of goes back to the work you've done around business support, a one-stop shop for companies who can to ring up and say, look, I'm not quite sure about the regulation because it spans two or three government departments or two or three regulators. Can somebody there kind of just give me a little bit of a kind of signpost and help me on my way? Thanks.
Thanks very much, Peter. Yeah, what I think makes it quite a powerful piece of work is hearing directly from businesses themselves. And I think one reflection maybe on the foundational economy as a policy agenda is that it really does actually encourage not just government but all of us working in public policy to try and be a little bit more grounded in the way we think about things like business. Really striking thing, a real focus of this work is that there is a huge distinction between different types of businesses, how they interact with the markets that they're in, but also obviously how they're engaging with regulation. So I'll talk quickly just about some of the things that we're recommending that are coming out of this report. I won't go through everything because, some of them we've kind of covered in sort of general terms, for instance, you know, one thing that we've really emphasized is about the role of support and the kinds of support that public bodies, public agencies can provide. You know, some fantastic examples from the food industry of where you've got sort of industry expertise and you're bringing in higher education as well to play a role in that. So that what you're essentially doing is a form of business support that is not general business support, but it's quite specific about within your industry, how do you get the certification you need? How do you get licensed to do the things that you want to do? And we obviously think that there's a role there for regulators to play in that as well. But I think one of the really key things that we've highlighted is at the Welsh Government level, is that a lot of what we're talking about in terms of, you know, the principles for how to do good regulation, a lot of that is established, as I've mentioned before, in other places, in a policy statement or in a form of legislation. And that's something we feel is missing in Wales at the moment, particularly, you know, looking past the more kind of established, better regulation agenda and using things like regulatory impact assessments and actually bringing in sort of more recent principles. Like at the European Commission level, you have the think small first principle, which is essentially requiring regulators to think about how the impact of a regulation might work differently for different types of firms. I think that's a really important step for thinking about the foundation economy. It is ultimately about recognizing that there is a huge diversity within the private sector. So that's something we think that there's an opportunity, particularly with the context of Brexit and everything else, to start thinking about how we embed some of those principles a bit more. One observation as well comes through very clearly across all the sectors is just about the complexity of the process of just reading, understanding regulations, let alone building in systems to comply with them or to report on them. And we think that there is a kind of, again, an established mechanism that's happening other places, but it's not really being formalised in Wales. And that's about starting to look at principle-based regulation or outcome-based regulation rather than legalistic complex rules. You instead look at a number of short statements that kind of set out what you as an agency or what you believe that the industry as a whole should be working towards. And there's a lot of evidence that this actually creates a better environment for compliance and that you share the responsibility a little bit more between regulators and the firms that they regulate. We also think that a really key thing here, there's a number of things that we touched on really relate to local authorities. We talked about the planning system. And changes that kind of changes in the way that it's applied potentially that can be done at a local authority level in terms of social care and in terms of micro care. There's an important role for local authorities to just really build relationships and to make sure that, you know, referrals are going out and that procurement applications for procurement are coming in and just making sure that those relationships are kind of going both ways. And obviously, we've touched on the fact that local authorities are also an important player in terms of being the inspectorate on things like, you know, health and safety and food standards. But I don't think you can really ask anything more of local government without addressing the resource question. And you could apply this to procurement, which is something that's often talked about in the foundation economy as well. And what we think is that when rules are being set, the impact assessment process should not just be about modelling what will this mean for certain businesses. It should also be what is this going to cost? What's this going to cost for us to inspect regularly, to enforce? Currently, there are examples where that is being done, but it's very much a case-by-case basis. We think that's something that should be more standardized so that if local authorities are being given more responsibility, they're also being given more resource from central government in order to do that. We talked a little, Peter raised about procurement. And I think a general reflection on that, something that we've made some recommendations on, is really about the importance of taking a local focus. So that where frameworks like the TOMS framework can be hugely valuable for procurement professionals. Really, there's no substitute for local government deciding on a place basis what is important for social value. There's some examples. We've heard some examples of certain firms, larger firms, know how to game or are starting to game the TOM system a little more. So they're starting to identify where there are sort of key metrics they can meet by making certain commitments and bring not necessarily fulfilling those commitments in a way which is local. So we think that ultimately the design of these frameworks, the use of metrics, has to be something that's much more informed at a local level. That means engaging with citizens. It also means engaging with your local firms so that those firms who maybe don't, you know, have their own barriers to accessing procurement can start to understand a little more about how that process works and also contribute to how you understand social value. You're not just defining social value and telling them to go and fulfill it. You're kind of defining social value, all of you together, much more collaborative process. So you can obviously see the full report on our website. We've added a link into the chat if you're interested in looking now. We discuss our conclusions and recommendations in full there. But hopefully you all get the sense that this is a piece of work that is very much built on the reflections of businesses. You know, we've done the work of trying to map that against policy. But these reflections are ultimately, as Peter has said, there's a lot of nuance there. This is not calling for strict deregulation, or on the other hand, for kind of harder enforcement. There's a very nuanced picture that comes from across all of these sectors. So having concluded a little what our report is about, we're really, really pleased to have Dr. Slierab Gareth from FSB with us here today. FSB, as many of you will know, has sort of been championing not just foundation economy, but issues around regulation and its impact on small businesses in Wales for a number of years. So we're really happy to have Clear with us today, just to be able to give us, you know, a couple of comments and reflections and provide some sort of context and background. So over to you, Clear.
Thanks, Jack. Just to start with, I think it's an excellent report, and it's music to our ears in terms of the things that you're saying here as well, in terms of that it reflects lots of what our members have been telling us, both anecdotally but also in surveys over the years. Clearly, you know, as you said, you know, regulation is not the most sexy of subjects, you know, and my idea of, you know, wanting to do a few reports under the title Joy of Rags has fallen on deaf ears in FSB, sadly. But nevertheless, it's really, really important to our members. And our findings similarly have always found that regulation is one of the key barriers to productivity, to being able to expand your business. Maybe many choose not to go into new markets because of the regulatory aspects involved and the complexity involved. So to start with, I'd like just start with by saying that this reflects a lot of the research that we've found over the years, and it's true, and I'll try not to labour the points that have been made already. Regulation is really important to small businesses. You know, it builds trust, it builds confidence. At its best, it provides a level playing field with bigger businesses. It ensures that, you know, products are safe, that everybody's working in the same regulatory environment, that there's a fair level playing field to economic competition. So let's start with that. It's absolutely not, our members are not in our surveys saying they want to get rid of regulation. It's not a bonfire of the rags sort of thing. Similarly, I'd like to make the point again that small businesses, you know, as you can imagine, one person has to understand everything on regulation, but also across all the other aspects of the business in many of these businesses, you know, particularly the ones where we're going to the micro level, which is under 10 employees, but even under 50 employees, you're looking at businesses who don't have their own dedicated HR departments. They may have to outsource it, which has a cost in terms of on some of the more difficult and complex aspects. So it's important, therefore, that, as you mentioned, the think small first is something we've been championing for quite some time. Governments, and this is not just Welsh government or even just or UK governments alone, but most governments seem to look at regulation and think of the impact in terms of business as big business, and then regulate accordingly. So I'd like to just mention what those opportunity costs also mean in a wider level. You know, from our surveys, 36% of our members in a recent survey said that it regulation impacted on their productivity. One in 10 said that it stopped them going into new markets. So it does have an impact on that side of growth. But I think in terms of the foundational economy side, some of which is on growth, we want to get small businesses moving to be medium-sized businesses locally. But there's also that all that side of capacity and capabilities. So, you know, for example, if Welsh government is looking at how to move towards decarbonisation, towards a fair work agenda and all of that side of things, time is finite for businesses. They have the capacity and capabilities to do a lot of stuff, perhaps. But you know, the more they have to do on one thing over here, the less they can do on things over here. So it's important in that respect, I think, to understand some of the perverse outcomes that can come from an overly complex system of regulation. And this links to that side of what we want from institutions, because I think in the report that you discussed the food innovation side of things, where there's a more positive relation between the regulator and those institutions and those whom they regulate. You know, it's a supportive environment. It's moving towards looking at regulation as supporting innovation, of supporting moves into new markets, rather than perhaps the traditional view that we often start with, which is thou shalt not, you know? So that's a side we think that is important to keep in mind. And that links to, you know, what economic development is all about, and seeing regulation as being intrinsically linked to economic development rather than something that stops and hinders firms doing stuff alone. There are times, obviously, when thou shalt not is important, but there are times when it can be a problem, I think. And this links then to a wider view on the principles of regulation and the principles of what we want from economic development in Wales. So regulation in this sense fits quite nicely with what we've called for in terms of an economic development bill, which tidies up those aims, that vision for what economic development is about and what we want to achieve in the next 30 years in Wales, and then what follows from those principles, regulation being a key part of that. And as Jack has mentioned, this fits quite nicely with that idea of having a principles-based approach, an idea where you're saying what these regulations are for and what and engage with small businesses about the best way to get there, rather than perhaps putting reams and reams of requirements that are incredibly difficult to understand in isolation from each other. So I'd just like to quickly add a little bit that's quite important, I think, though it seems like a minor point. We've discussed regulations and perhaps the amount of them, but possibly there's a need to differentiate between the regulations, which businesses quite understand, and small businesses find can often be helpful to them in providing a level playing field, versus the requirements that regulation the requirements that are needed to be made of businesses. So one regulation can lead to tens, hundreds of requirements. And it's often at that level that we find that the complexity comes in. And those requirements are, in fact, the parts that take up all the time, where there's a need to report on them, where there's a need to be, compliant with them. And that's perhaps the place where we would look to addressing where they're needed, how many of them are needed, and is there a better way to do it? So finally, just in terms of something we've called for, and I'll just share the link to our recent report on this, which is called Escaping the Maze, which probably gives you an idea of how we view our small businesses seeing the regulatory environment. We've called on the UK government, and there's nothing stopping Welsh government from looking at a similar angle, to follow the British Columbia model of looking at mapping all the requirements that are in place. British Columbia found there were 380,000 that impacted on business, and then looking to cut those requirements by a third. Now, the point of this is as much to free up space to map out what's there. It's actually a really useful exercise for regulators and public institutions, all the public bodies, to do themselves, to understand what's there and exactly how they're approaching it. And that also leads to the idea of culture change, to look at those regulation, like that regulatory framework, as being, yes, in order to steer businesses towards the good practice and to make sure of all the things that the public would expect, but also to look at what the regulators themselves are doing in order to help that and to stop there being perverse outcomes and too many needless requirements. So I'll stop there, because I think I've probably talked enough and I'm in danger of reiterating what's already been said. But just to say, really good, report, and you know, I welcome IWA to the small business obsessives on regulation. So nice to have you here.
Thanks very much, Leo. It's it is striking. I've said it already, and we'll just say again, it is striking that an issue that, when you take a sort of a group within the population, small business owners, and you see an issue that is so important to them, that is maybe not quite getting the attention or having the kind of, you know, infrastructure and institutions around it that we would see in terms of other areas, other potential interest groups. So it really is. It's important work that the FSB has been doing. It really was eye-opening piece of work for us to do, I think, to really see this and hear this kind of lived experience of what business owners are facing.
Okay, so we're moving to Q&A. We're not getting huge volumes of questions through from the chat, but there's still time to slot a few in. I thought we'd be all over TikTok by now with people doing dances about regulation, but not entirely surprised that we perhaps haven't. I'm going to just start with one question, and before I kind of pick up one or two from the chat function. So Peter's touched on this a little, but the kind of the elephant in the room with this conversation is, obviously, we're talking about a devolved government and in a devolved nation. Not all of the regulations that affect small businesses in Wales are set by the Welsh government. So I guess a question perhaps for Clear first of all, and then Jack and Peter, if you want to come in, you know, how should the Welsh government be engaging with the UK-based regulatory, UK regulators? Peter's talked about, you know, the need for kind of utility connections, and obviously that's regulated by Ofgem. How does the Welsh government make sure that its kind of economic development priorities inform what kind of UK-wide regulation? How the approach to UK-wide regulation, what more could it be doing on that? Claire, perhaps start with you.
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? The devolved aspect adds that extra layer of complexity on that front due to, you know, where regulation sits on different sectors. I guess our point in looking at how Welsh government can consolidate and provide the roles and remits for the institution that sits under its own banner, as it were, is to provide clarity around to its own approach, and also to provide a clear point of contact that then looks at how those interrelate perhaps with the wider UK regulatory framework and with other actors. Welsh government can provide a role in pushing regulators elsewhere. They can provide evidence about where something isn't working and what the issues are. But having its own story and vision on these things provides a clear basis for where those negotiations happen and what the push is and why, which is why we point to it as a good way of perhaps tidying up the ecosystem with a clear central point of contact with those outside of Wales, provides a little more simplicity in order to have those negotiations. And that counts also for cross-governmental discussions and negotiations, you know, that you're able to put your stall out, as it were, and then that helps to provide a framework for how you bring other people in.
Just to pick up on that as well.
Just before you do, Jack, sorry. So I think we'll have a question next from Ivan Glynn in the chat. Yes. So perhaps if Maria, if you just could get ready to let Ivan join us on the video, and then Jack, yeah, please.
Yeah, sure. I was just going to add on that. It's an interesting one how, you know, there's a wider question how Welsh government manages those kind of relationships with UK government, UK bodies, and kind of acts as a bit of a cheerleader, you know, often something you think of something like a regional development agency. And the Welsh government does have that role. So it does have a role to do that and be kind of passing on views and information that it's getting from businesses. I think one of the concerns we had doing this work is it looks like an area in which the Welsh government is behind. And there are certain processes being done at the UK government level. And there is, you know, a sort of duty expectation that they will start assessing, that agencies will start assessing, well, what does this mean for small businesses? Obviously, you have things as well like the growth duty in place and that require public bodies to kind of report on how their work will support the growth of businesses. So it sort of feels like at the moment, before even getting into the structures of how they would do it, as Lia has said, they really do need to have a much more clear policy position on it. And that's the basis with which you then start that engagement.
Thanks, Jack. So Ivan, that's over to you for your question. I don't think I'm able to hear you, Ivan. Sorry, I'm not sure what's going on. We can't hear you. You're not muted, but I don't know if perhaps your microphone's not plugged in. Okay. Sorry, Ivan, I'm not sure what's going on there, but I'll... muted myself. This is going well. Okay, so I've got the text of Ivan's question, and I just the last bit of your question in the chat, Ivan. I just was going to ask you to kind of elaborate on what you meant by it, so perhaps you could pop that into the chat as I read it out. So Ivan was going to ask us. He says, we often talk about overregulation. Any thoughts on the potential damaging impact of underregulation on businesses and wider economic development? And the example he gives is the domestic building sector is arguably being underregulated in the UK. So I'm interested, Ivan, if you perhaps in the chat tell us a little more about what you feel that underregulation looks like in your view. But again, perhaps coming to Lear first, you know, do you have any views on that? Particularly, I know a lot of your members are involved in the kind of, you know, the construction sector. Do they feel underregulated? Would they, you know, would they agree with the premise of Ivan's question?
I think in terms of developers, I think we have often have the public discourse in that idea of developers versus local authorities. That some people feel that developers are able to ride roughshod over other things. However, I think that's one of those issues where you're discussing regulation. There's that implicit idea that regulation impacts on all of the businesses of all the similar sizes at the same level, which is something your report does go into in quite some detail around how, you know, that the perverse impact of some of the regulatory issues around that side of things has impact meant that we don't have as many small businesses involved, that there are fewer people in the market to provide for all the different types of housing we want. So I guess the point is that there's a side to that, that there might be under regulation around certain aspects that might hit some parts of that trade, but do not probably help our members that much. In terms of on the developer side and domestic housing, small businesses often have the trouble that all of those things that are discussed in your report are often at the front end of costs, you know, and they stop. It means that there's a lot of risk involved at the start of the process before you reach the point where you're actually at profit. And when we're talking about margins, that can be very, very important. There's a reason we talk about margins and why this is a particular problem for small businesses. So I think the premise of the question is probably based around that linkages of regulation with all businesses, when it might be regulation that's there to try to stop for overdevelopment of a certain type. But that's probably not my field of expertise, and probably would be for Ivan to say exactly where he's coming from with that, I think.
I could jump in as well, just with one example very quickly as well. So something that we looked into a little bit is about building regulation, and obviously in the context of the tragedy at Grenfell Tower. And I think one of the things to think about in all of the review process that's going on around that at the moment is that one of the key problems there was about the inspection regime as much as rules. And it was essentially a lot of things have been pushed into a space where they could be self-certified. So I think this is where it's really important to think of regulation and inspection as being two sides of the same thing, and that you can't setting regulation sort of to add more or to add less has to come with the right inspection regime. And that sometimes, you know, businesses who are pushing for less regulation, what they actually get as a result of that kind of push is a weaker inspection regime. The rules remain the same, but it just gives them a little bit more flexibility around that. So I think it's very complex. And there are, I think when we've talked about principles-based regulation as well, you know, we do recognize that there's public safety to think of, and that's not always appropriate.
Yeah, and I would agree, Jack. And we're at 12 o'clock, so I might let us run over for no more than 5 minutes, just to fit in one or two more questions. So one from Brian Eady, who mentions that he's leaving, so I won't invite him to come onto the video. But he's talking about principle-based regulation and a concern that that might result in increased business non-compliance with principles which are not mandatory. Claire, you touched on this in one of your earlier comments, but one approach to kind of principle-based regulation is actually having a kind of anticipatory and enabling framework, which actually incentivizes better compliance with the principles rather than the thou shalt not approach, which, you know, I agree is appropriate in some circumstances. So I think Jack said, and I would agree, that we're kind of behind the curve a little on this in Wales. What would your members think of a framework where the Welsh Government's kind of actively incentivizing them to kind of move towards the social value and make that kind of moving towards that path, the path of least resistance? I'm thinking of it like with the environmental agenda in particular. You know, what more could Welsh Government be doing to kind of reward through regulation businesses who are doing innovative things on the kind of the green agenda and therefore make Wales a more kind of attractive place to be a clean green business?
Yeah, I think that's the point we're looking at, really, isn't it? It's regulation has that side of providing incentives as well as, you know, as well as obviously the thou shalt not. You don't want to be having everybody litter our rivers and so on. This is there's areas that thou shalt not is quite right, but there's areas whereby like in terms of the environmental side, regulations can be a steer if it's done in an enabling way towards moving people towards markets, towards business opportunities, as well as as well as regulating the activities you do to stop you doing bad stuff. You know, it's not just the equivalent of a sin tax. You can use it as an incentive towards things, you know? And with the environmental agenda, in many ways, the problems we often find is that small businesses, like many individuals, it's often worth thinking of them as similar quite often, is that people don't have the knowledge about what's the things that will have the right impact. What's the things that, what are the tools available to do to have an impact within your business? And that sort of side of having that engaging, supporting and steering principle-based approach on something like environment is something that actually engages that conversation going, allows people to, it facilitates more social learning than perhaps, you know, reams of thousands of requirements that individually don't make much sense when you read them and you don't, can't see the, you know, the wood for the trees, basically. So that's the idea behind it. And the same idea is that also taking the idea of, you know, the idea that the danger of non-compliance as a result. Well, I think in general, the argument would be that you're more likely to get compliance to regulations that people understand why it's there and what it does. Now, you know, you have good and bad businesses, good and bad individuals on these things. But in general, at the aggregate level, we think that side of having that understanding and social learning is a good thing and would actually lead to better outcomes.
Great. Well, I promise we would overrun by no more than 5 minutes, so I'm going to keep to that. Our director, Aura Miller, isn't with us today, but she would not forgive me for letting us overrun substantially. So I'm just going to say thanks very much to all of our speakers and to all of you for being with us today and contributing to the discussion. Thanks in particular to Peter and his team at The Means for working with us on this project. And obviously, well done to Jack for bringing it all together and holding the pen on the final report, which I hope you will all be able to take some time to look at and give us your feedback on. Our aim at these open events is always to kind of identify issues that need further thought, articulate what those issues are, and get people thinking about what needs to change, why and how, and so we can all play our part in making Wales better. If you want to receive early notifications of future IWA events and recordings of all our sessions direct to your inbox without even having to go and look for them, please join us as a member on the Support Us page of our website at iwa.wales. Perhaps someone will pop that already have in the chat for you now. Thanks very much for joining us today and see you at the next of our IWA events in about 2 weeks' time. Watch your inboxes for details of that. Thanks very much.